1CJW. I went shopping the other day, and I was looking for an item, and I couldn't find it. And when the salesman was trying to talk me into something else, so I told him, I says, when I get old, I'm going to think about it. But I says, right now, I'm a long ways off. And he gave me the funniest look in the world, and he walked away from me. He said, boy, this guy is really bad shape. K1CJW.
A little of that too, it's kind of fun. Anyway, everybody have a good one, Casey. For easy here.
Let me make sure I got it. But do something else. So I don't have any inkwell stories, but the only thing I can think of that's remotely related to an ink pen was. I used to be friends with a older gentleman lived up the road, and he worked on the machinery that made the ball that goes in the end of a of an ink pen. What do you call it? A ball tip ink pen, or what? That little bitty ball that goes in the end. And he worked on the machinery that would grind those things. And one day he was telling me about how they made those little things. And the ball has to be perfectly smooth. It can't have any, you know, imperfections in it, because it won't roll in the end of the tip. So the tip has to have a certain amount of clearance in it to let the ink actually lubricates the ball as it writes on the paper, but the ball has to roll. So I know everybody's probably experienced a ink pen that won't write, and that's, you know, he was explaining to me all that. I mean, I'm not trying to bore you here, but I just can't imagine, you know, a piece of machinery that can grind a ball that small. I mean, that's just tiny, tiny, tiny.
Ed, I got a good question for you. Do you know how the microwave came out to be?
Sure, I don't, Roland. I don't. Go ahead and tell me.
I used to work for Raytheon Corporation in a big mill they had in Andover, Massachusetts. There was approximately 8,000 people working in one building. It used to be an old cotton mill of some kind. What happened is he was working on some high-frequency equipment, and he was eating. No, his buddies were going out to eat, and he said he was busy with that for them to bring him a sandwich. He didn't have time to go to lunch. We had a cafeteria right in the building. Well, anyways, they did bring him a sandwich back. And while he was working on this equipment, he laid his sandwich down because he wasn't ready to eat it. And when he picked it up, his sandwich was hot and cold. That's the day the microwave was born, K1CJW.
Okay, all right. Well, that's interesting. I guess that kind of moved technology into the microwave oven. But, so let's see, do I know anything about a microwave? So, actually, I do. So, Harry, do you got the QSL card I sent you? Is it close by?
But it's not close by. You had a bunch of satellite dishes and stuff on it, so I think I know where you're going. The story I heard about, not the microwave, but during World War II, when they came out with radar, that some of the mechanics discovered that if they would turn the radar on the airplane, they could hold their hands up in front of the antennas and warm their hands. They didn't understand they were cooking themselves, but that was one of the stories I heard. But I looked at your card, and I'm going to send you one back. It's not going to be quite that fancy, but it'll confirm the contacts. KC4EZ.
Well, what I'm getting at is next time you get the card, you see two reflectors on it. They look like big satellite dishes. Well, that's called a ANTRC 170, and otherwise known as Troposcatter or Mickey Mouse. We call them Mickey Mouse because they look like Mickey Mouse ears. Well, one of those reflectors is transmit, and the other one is receive. And they have a unbelievable amount of wattage that you can, at the operator's discretion, crank it up. So my wife used to mail me some care packages, and there's a shelter, a 8x10 shelter that hooks in the center of those with air conditioner and workbench and all that kind of stuff, like a really small apartment. And she would mail me some of the Orville Redenbacher's microwave popcorn. And when, me and the guys were on shift playing cards or whatnot, and we wanted a little snack, we kept a little broom handle there in the shelter. And we just take some duct tape and tape that bag of popcorn to the end of that broomstick. And we walk out there and stick it up in front of the feed horn, otherwise known as an ortho mode transducer. And it would just whoop, and just cook that quick. So we'd take it back in, eat a popcorn. And then we'd get a message a couple of minutes later that the link was acting funny. Be advised, somebody on the distant end got a warning that the link went down for a couple of seconds. But that's all it took, was just a couple of seconds.
Honey, KC4EZN. When you're in those kind of situations, sometimes you make do with what you got, and one of the things to stop and think about is, we use all of this technology, and we've got all this jargon, and you're talking about, your Mickey Mouse thing, and yeah, that's sort of what it looks like, but basically, it's just a way of putting energy into the atmosphere. And in that case, it's high frequency, very high frequency energy, and you really want it pointed in a particular place. But it's still energy, which is what your microwave's doing. You probably popped your popcorn. Normally, when I pop popcorn, it takes about 2.5 minutes in my microwave in the kitchen, and it sounds like you put out a little bit more power than my microwave does in the kitchen if you can pop it that fast. But it's still all the same idea. It's just kind of funny when you hear those stories, especially some of the stories I've heard from some folks coming out of the military, what they did. I was talking to a fella who made he made tools for people who made handmade furniture, and he had a draw knife that was there's a company out there that sells this stuff, and it's high dollar, and he's one of their suppliers. But his draw knife was very, very thin, so that he could go and turn a smaller than a half inch circle with that thing. And he said he made his very first one in Vietnam. He said he got so homesick that he went to one of the machine shops, and they gave him a bunch of old files that they had worn out. And he says, I took those things out and put them in a charcoal fire on the beach. And he says, I used the bumper one of those great big trucks that they use, or 6x or something like that's what he said. And he says, I used a bumper on that truck for my anvil, and he says, I hammered myself out a draw knife. And he says, when I got home and looked at it and realized I really had something, he says, then I started selling them. So, yeah, it's really interesting what we do with some of these things. We'll turn it back to you, Chad. KC4EZN.
Yeah, so let me make sure I got it. We had first deployment. I was in the wire and cable section. And I was the platoon sergeant, and we did all the transmission paths. CX11230, which is two runs of coax and, you know, a single strand, one transmit, one receive, shielded. Cat5, fiber optic, I mean, any kind of cable, you know, you could roll on the ground. We laid it out and hooked it up. Then the telecom section had come behind us and put their telephones on the end of the line. So we always had really good food to eat, because we would, you know, when we would move into a camp, first thing we'd do would go to, we'd run four or five lines out to the chow hall. And those cooks would, you know, being in a communication unit, it wasn't no big deal to call home. You know, you could call home every 10 minutes if you wanted to. But, you know, other units didn't have that privilege. So, and I won't be clear about this, I'm not ashamed of this at all. At all. But we'd always run four or five phones out to the chow hall. And we would, you know, leave them out there for a week or two. And we'd give them the DSN access so that they could go through our switch and call home. So we'd let them get hooked on it for a week or two. And then we'd go out there and tell them, hey, you know, we need 26 steaks, or we need some ice cream, or, you know, whatever we need. They just look at you real funny like, no, I'm not giving you steaks. What are you, crazy? So we'd send the wire and cable section out there, and we'd start jerking the phones out. Whoa, what are you doing? Well, you know, hey, this is the way this works. And once we came to an understanding, if you know what I mean, then, hey, we didn't have any more problems, you know. So, you know, don't ever underestimate the power of being able to talk to mama, because that's what we call a crowbar right there. That's some leverage.
Fellas, that's what we used to call the grease between the rock and the hard place. Those systems work, and it ultimately makes everything better. You can take a hard look at it and say, well, that's not right, you're doing this and that and others. But on the other hand, if it makes everybody get along, and I've not been any place yet that when people were well fed, it just got better. I mean, everything was better. I can remember teaching some leadership classes in Boy Scouts, and one of the things I would tell the people when they're planning a trip, and we're talking about like a 5 or 6 day, 50-mile hike, I said, you be real sure that evening meal is a good, tasty, hot meal. I says, you can take people and you can hike them out, and it can be spitting snow and cold and rainy, and you hike 10 or 15 miles a day. And I says, if you'll have them well fed at night, I said, the next morning, I said, they'll get up and do the same thing. But I says, if you put them to bed with a cup of warm water and some ramen noodles, I said, the next morning, I said, you're going to have a very unhappy group of people that you're going to have to be working with. So I said, you plan that meal to be a really good meal, and yeah, it's going to be a little bit heavier, and people are not going to carry the weight. But I says, when they're sitting there at the end of a long day, and their stomach's full, and they're comfortable, I said, get them up the next day, and you can run it again. So there's some benefit in all that. We're going to turn it back to you, Chad, and say 7-3. Tomorrow's going to turn out to be a little busier day. I got to get out and move some things around. I'm going to play with Wonderfield A from the house, but I want to set my generator up and, number one, exercise it a little bit, and number two, pick up a few extra points in that contest. Not that I'm a big contester, but it's still fun, and got a little bit of running around to do with that. So we'll turn it all back to you and enjoy the conversation, and just remember what I said. Roland is approaching old. I'm a little bit behind him, and you're still really wet behind the ears, Chad. So we'll leave you with that. My radio just beeped, told me I talked too long. So we'll turn it back to you, Chad. It's KC4EZN.
Go ahead, Roland.
Hey, have you heard from Walt? What's the story about him? Do you know anything about him?
Oh, yeah, I made an announcement before you came on. He had surgery yesterday morning. They installed a feeding tube, and he says he feels like he's got about 3 broken ribs. He's in a lot of pain. Described it as, it looks like a fuel line out the side of my body, and that's where they're gonna eventually start to feed him. His throat is very swollen, and his speech is not well. But it comes and goes. It's that's the only way I can describe it. It comes and goes. And he starts chemo on Monday, I think Monday morning, and has a follow-up appointment with the gastroenterologist 1 day this week. But I made contact with his daughter today, got her telephone number, so I can, you know, kind of keep in touch with what's going on. But, he wanted me to say hello to everybody, and I told him that, you know, everybody was thinking about him and everybody was praying for him. So that's pretty much it.
CJW for ID. He's in tough shape, but he should come out all right. He just got operated on yesterday. All right, thanks for the information, Chad. Keep me in touch about him, will you, please? J1CJW is going to bed. Good night, all, Chad.
Yes, sir, I will, Roland. KO4NUE, and I'll be clear to you. Be safe, Roland, now. I'll let you know what's going on. 73s, I'll be clear.
Well, see, that agreement you had there with the people who cooked there and your communications reminds me of someone else that was long before you and my time, but I heard a lot about Gregory Bowington and the Black Sheep.
I love Black Sheep Squadron. KO4NUE. But yeah, we use those telephones and the internet. We handle the internet too. And you want to talk about a bargaining chip. Now, you give somebody the internet, now, you know, hey, that's a different ball game right there. Now, you get an airplane if you want it.
You know, everything I've heard about them and said that's true was true about them, and, you know, I got to give it one thing. Those men were very patriotic for the way things was at the time, and sometimes what they done, it worked out in more ways than you would believe.
Oh, no, you're right, and Harry's right. It all works out, you know. You can say what you want, but at the end of the day, you know, they got to call home, and we, you know, got a little extra ice cream. So, you know, it's all good. You know, sometimes you just have to, you know, you gotta leverage what you got and make it work. And we learned real quick that being able to call home was, you know, something else.
You're right about that. Y'all had that advantage where others didn't. And like I say, that describing that reminded me of what I heard about them.
So let me tell you a little funny story. So on the first deployment, we were right outside of Buka, which is, I think it's right outside of the border there in Iraq. And the sandstorms would come, I don't know, sometimes they'd last 3 or 4 days. I mean, it was awful sometimes. And one day I was in a Humvee going to Chow Hall, and it was real, real dusty. You know, you could see probably 5-10 feet in front of you. So I had to go real slow so you didn't, you know, run over anybody or anything. And you'd have the assistant driver looking out the window to help spot for you. So we're going to the Chow Hall, in the direction of the Chow Hall, and I hear this bump, bump, bump on the side of the truck. So I stopped the truck thinking, you know, maybe I've run over something or something. And this fella comes around the side of the Humvee, and he's in bib overalls. And he's a civilian contractor with the Oshkosh Corporation. Works on these, that build these big trucks for the military. And, boy, he looked rough. I mean rough. And he was from Pennsylvania. And I said, what are you doing out here in bib overalls? And he said, man, he said, let me tell you. He says, I am from Pennsylvania, and the Oshkosh Corporation talked me into coming out here to support these trucks for the 3rd Infantry Division. And they told me I'd have my own shop, and I'd have a bunch of Army mechanics working for me. And he says, I have been in a truck for about 3 months, and I ain't had a shower, and I don't know how long. And I just, you know, I got to get away from these infantry guys. Can you, you know, where are y'all headed? And I said, we're going to Chow Hall. We pulled up to Chow Hall, and we were, you know, talking. We talked 10, 15 minutes, you know, just listen to him tell this horrible story about, you know, how Uncle Sam lied to him. And we, you know, I said, well, come on, let's get something to eat. And then we went in there and got something to eat. And we took him back to the communication cell and sat him down and says, here's the telephone. And here's the access, how you get out. And he called his wife and talked with her for, probably an hour or so, I guess. And then we had an extra tent for VIP, so we put him up in VIP for a night or two and let him get some rest. But country, I mean, he's just as country as can be. But he realized he done got himself in a mess and couldn't get out of it, but he was doing the best he could.
Well, see, he realized that after the fact what he's done, but now he got to deal with it.
So he was telling me that the next morning we invited him over for coffee, and we sit down talking about, you know, kind of what was going on up north. And he was explaining that he's, you know, how difficult it was to keep the trucks running, because they would run what's called hot seat, which means they'd load these trucks full of, you know, just tons of supplies. And then they would drive it 600 miles into Iraq, and then they'd have another crew waiting in Iraq. They would unload, put another crew in it, and send it back down to Kuwait. And they did this for, I don't know, over 90 days, just constantly, you know, just never shut the trucks down. And he, you know, took me out to the motor pool and says, "Hey, let me, you know, show you this truck here." So there's one PLS sitting there that was running. One of the other trucks, the starter went bad on it and couldn't get a starter for it. So they took the starter off of that truck while it was running, taped the wires up, and put it on the other truck to get it started. And he said that truck has been running for 45 days. Just has, you know, never shut down, you know, for 45 days straight. And they just go out there and pour some old oil in it or keep fuel in it, you know. But, I mean, that's kind of mess that you get involved in when you gotta move stuff like that. You gotta find a way to make it happen.
Well, see, it really makes me appreciate. I got some of those old Black Sheep Squadron DVDs here, and makes you appreciate what all y'all and them too, because they was even in more of a war than what you was in a situation like that. What all y'all got to go through?
I first got my license and was looking through some of the Q codes. I didn't know what Q codes were and what all that meant. And, yeah, I went to some website and printed off, a couple pages old. And I don't know if you've looked through some of those Q codes, but, man, some of that is, you know, I'm having to crash land. Here are my coordinates, and, you know, things like that. And I'm just thinking, my goodness, you know, I can't imagine having to come up with a Q code to send that out in Morse code now while you're flying an airplane, or while you're being shot at. My goodness, I mean, I can't even imagine that. That's just a jitter different generation, and I guess that's why they call them the greatest generation, because, man, that's just unbelievable.
J-I-4-L-Z-I. Yeah, back before our time and back off of night time, you know, when you at a time like that, and you know the fact you've been in military and communications, you got to keep, you can't let just anybody hear what's being said either. And back in their time, Boynton and the Black Sheep's town, pretty much all there was CW and phone. And you had to make sure this stuff was kept in some way encrypted where not just anybody can hear it. That's where some of that, when they was talking about using some of the Indians, some of their way they communicated, and the Japanese didn't know what they was.
Wind talkers, I think, something like that. I think it was Navajo that they used. I think there's a movie about that too. I can't remember the name of it. But I can't imagine. That's just a different. Oh man, that's just a different kind of time, you know. I was watching a documentary the other night, Andy, on I think it was the USS Indianapolis, one of the battleships there, KO4NUE, that was sunk in I think Leyte Gulf or somewhere out there in the Pacific. I don't know where it was. But it was, about 1,500 feet of water, and they found it. They've been looking for it for years and found it. So they sent this submersible down there to take of it. And you can watch it on YouTube. I forget the name of it. You can just do a search for the USS Indianapolis. Well, anyway, they had one of the sailors that was on the ship when it was sunk. And he's in his, I think he's in his 80s or 90s. And he was able to watch the video of the submersible to see the ship. And, submersible was showing videos of it, and he was explaining everything about the ship and how it was hit and how it was sunk and this, that, and the other. And it was a pretty emotional experience for him, you know. And you could tell he was kind of struggling with it a little bit. But he told the guy doing the documentary that he said, "Hey, my bunk is on the second deck down, and I've got $20 in the wall locker down there. If you can get that submersible down there, you can have it." And I just thought, oh man, how funny is that? I mean, he's trying to make light of a bad situation, you know. But I'm just thinking, oh my goodness, he's worried about losing $20 and he got off of there alive. Oh my goodness. But I guess that's just veteran humor, I guess.
Well, considering what he went through about that, I guess that's, you know, fact he survived, because I believe I might have seen that you're talking about. It was sunk right near the end of the war by a torpedo, got it, just before the end of the war there.
But it is about looking at ships that's, you know, been under on the sea floor. I don't know. That kind of stuff just fascinating to me. But it was kind of funny. You know, he was struggling with it a little bit and was trying to turn things around. He was doing a good job at it too, you know. But at any rate. Well, Andy, I'm gonna go ahead and close down, but I'm just gonna let you know, and I don't forget now, if you want me to come get you on Saturday, I will. I'll be glad to, and take you back when you want to go. Just keep that in mind. And the other thing too is I'm planning on being there Tuesday night at the EOC, so just wanted to make sure you was coming.
I'm going to be at DOC Tuesday night. If I'm still living, then I plan on being there, but back to deer camp and get into 16, but you got that net there, and like we mentioned the other night, Tuesday night, I don't know how many's going to be there, but he's right about, Dave was about one thing. Y'all need to come up with some bandpass filters there so that y'all don't mess up a radio there between however many of them is going to be there, so. K-O-4-N-U-E-K-I-4-L-C-I.
We'll figure something out. I'm not sure yet what, but we'll get it figured out. We'll do something. But anyway, well, listen, it's nice talking to you, Andy, and I just want to let you know I got a card from Jack, and if I can remember, I'll bring it to the EOC so you can take a look at it. It's a pretty card. But anyway, I'm going to clear on out, 73 to you, and be safe, and I'll see you. I'll talk at you next time I talk at you. KO4NUE, and I'm clear.
You know what Jack's frequencies are on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. You can get into them or get on 38, as you did, 3856 with KI4LCI.